It's time for No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. Here are your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren from the Area Agency on Aging.
Hey, everybody, it's time for No Copay Radio right here on Cozy 101.1 every Sunday morning at 7:30. We are here, and we're glad you are there. We always have some great topics to talk about your health or caregiver's health or family members that might help you along, all brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. That number is 303-480-6700. I'm Murphy Houston, and my typical partner every Sunday here on Cozy 101.1 for No Copay Radio is Jayla Sanchez Warren, who runs the Area Agency on Aging. She is not here today, but we'll continue on. And always a reminder, we keep all these interviews we've done over the months and the weeks in the past. And if there's something you'd like to review again, if you go to KOSI101.com, you can find all our shows under the No Copay Radio tab there on Cozy. But I'll tell you who is here with us, our good friend Dr. John Douglas, former director of the Tri-County Health, also worked with the CDC. And John, good to have you back on No Copay Radio.
Nice to be with you, Murph. I hope you've been doing well.
Well, we're doing well. We're hanging in here. Last week, we kind of startled people. You'll be proud of me, though, after a discussion about getting your flu shot now and your, what is it, the CRV or CRS or whatever that one is. My wife and I went out and got both shots.
All right, man. You're a walking miracle. That's great.
Well, the cool part was we went to Walgreens. We figured they might have the flu shot. So we got the flu shot, and while they're there, she goes, oh, by the way, since you're a senior, do you want the other shot as well? We got them. I said, put it right in. Let's do it. And, yeah, it was great. So I feel pretty much ahead of the game.
Well, that's great. I got my RSV shot, but they didn't have flu shots the day I went in, so I'm halfway toward you. But hopefully going to do ourselves a good turn by keeping safe from RSV.
Well, and I think people are surprised that there is a vaccine already for RSV, and it's out there and went ready to go. Now, another friend of mine went to a different Walgreens. They had the flu shot, but not the RSV. And they said there's a hot trail on that RSV vaccine, so the word's getting out, isn't it?
Well, I'm very happy to hear that because it is, as you said, new. To the extent that people know about RSV and you know, you were joking around about calling it whatever you called it, CVS or whatever. You know, it's not a term that immediately comes to mind for lots of people. And if it does, it's been mostly thought about as a disease of babies. But it, with increasing data that, frankly, like so many respiratory viruses, older adults can have bad outcomes from it.
Right.
Estimated up to 10,000 people a year dying of it. So this is, it's not as bad as the flu and certainly not as bad as COVID for older adults, but certainly is can be quite serious. So it's, I think, a really important advance. I don't know how you fared. I had a sore arm for 2 days, but otherwise, no problems.
Yeah, you're right. I did, too, with that RSV shot. Not the flu shot. The flu shot was nothing. But, yeah, the RSV hurt for a couple of days. I was surprised at that. Why? What would the difference be in that? I don't get it.
Well, we haven't probably had as much experience with RSV vaccine, and it may also have I don't know that much about the chemical composition of it. It may have an adjuvant, which is a chemical that's put into all vaccines to try to stimulate an immune response that's a little more immunoreactive. In all likelihood, a sore arm means your immune system is waking up and smelling the coffee and doing good things, so
right.
It's a good sign.
Yeah, it is. And then the other thing I heard in the news, and we're kind of off what we're – well, we're not really off what we're going to talk about – but it sounds like they're really pushing for the new COVID vaccine to come out pretty quick.
Well, I hope so. We're still, you know, the FDA approved the formulation. The CDC approved the idea. They've got to approve the final formulation, which is supposed to happen soon. I keep hearing sometime in September, but I haven't heard an exact date yet.
Yeah.
And as a reminder, if you've gotten previous boosters – and you haven't actually gotten the most recent recommended booster for adults, probably better to hold off and wait till this new formulation comes along. So, and hopefully that's going to be sometime in September. But in the meantime, folks can do what you just said you did, which is to get the flu vaccine, which is for everybody, and the RSV vaccine, which is for folks 60 and older.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Those are both out there and generally ready to be received.
Right. And I'd go in early because if the word's out and they already have a little shortage on that RSV, I'd get in as soon as possible. Just get it over with. Be done.
Yeah.
and you'll be better.
I think it's we know the immunity from that actually lasts at least 8 months or so. So it's not like, oh, if I get it tomorrow, I'll run out of gas by Christmas. That's not going to happen. So getting it as soon as you can get it, I think, is a good idea.
Well, since we're talking about drugs here with Dr. John Douglas, and we're going to talk about the Medicare price negotiations. And you brought that to my attention, and I forgot that I had seen that this week. And that's kind of big news. Talk about that. What's that all mean?
Yeah, this is a pretty, I think, frankly, in some ways, long overdue step. So Medicare covers lots of different people, about 65 billion people in the country. It covers me and you, or at least it covers me. I think it might cover you.
Yeah, it does.
The U.S. has lagged behind the rest of the world in having its national health programs negotiate for one of the most expensive parts of healthcare, which are drugs. And when Medicare was started in the 60s, 1965, only inpatient medications were covered. And so for decades, folks that took outpatient medications had to pay for them on their own or had to get them through another insurance policy. That got changed in 2003 when Medicare Part D came into effect. That's 20 years ago now. But as part of the delicate negotiations in Congress, it prohibited Medicare from negotiating with the providers of drugs, the pharmaceutical companies, for drug prices. Now, that's different than every other part of Medicare. They negotiate with doctors, they negotiate with hospitals, they negotiate with everybody, but not with the people who make the medications. So that changed in 2021 with the Inflation Reduction Act, which said, you know what, drug costs are really going through the roof. Outpatient medications are really an increasingly expensive part. And frankly, the U.S. has got the worst negotiating posture of any country in the world. We pay 2.5 to 3.5 times more for our drugs than any other developed country in the world.
Oh, man, that's horrible.
2.5. It's really astounding. That's why a lot of people, frankly, go to Canada to get medications, because there are national negotiations there. What the law provided was that beginning in 2023, right now, the first 10 among the most expensive drugs that Medicare pays for would be subject to price negotiations. And that list of the first 10 drugs just got announced a couple of days ago. That's why there was a news headline. So we're beginning the process of having Medicare do what every other health program in all of the developed countries do, which is negotiate for prices. Now, it's likely to be a contentious process.
Oh, I'm sure.
The drug companies would obviously like to keep prices as high as we will pay. But it's not only going to help the Medicare program, which I think everybody knows is in danger of going broke, but it's also going to help some of the out-of-pocket expenses that people have to pay, some who are getting older on these medications but not yet covered by Medicare. So I think it's an important step, and it'll be a long road. We won't see these new prices come into effect until 2026.
Oh, boy. So
tomorrow everything's better. But it is, I think, a long overdue important step that's beginning to happen.
Well, do you know, John, what some of the drugs are they're going to start negotiating? Which ones are they working with that are so expensive?
Yeah, they're primarily drugs for diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. And I'll read off the list to you. If you take one, you might recognize it. If you don't take any, these will sound like Greek to you. But The drugs are Eliquis, Jardiance, Xarelto, Januvia, Farxiga, Entresto, Enbrel, Imbruvica, Stelara, and Fiasp, which is an insulin product. Now, these are mostly oral medications. A couple of these are injectables. But they all share in common they're really expensive, and they cost anywhere from around $600-$700 a month up to about $10,000 a month.
$10,000? Holy cow!
Well, one of them, which is a medication for cancer, not a very common drug, Imbruvica, actually is estimated to cost about $17,000 a month.
Oh man! So
it's like it's you know, it's through the roof. And on the one hand, pharmaceutical companies have clearly provided a public service by developing new medications. They did that during COVID. Paxlovid, you and I have both taken that.
Right, right.
Not at all trying to paint them as the bad guys. I think we owe a lot to them. But we really have an imbalanced situation where we uniquely in this country pay less or more, rather, for drugs than really any other country in the world.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Some of those I did recognize, and you know how? You see them advertised on television.
Well, there's a big profit margin which allows you to market them.
Yes. Yes. It's unbelievable the money they must make. And I can't imagine the pharmaceutical companies are going to make those negotiations easy. I can't imagine. I mean, is there a time process? Okay, we're going to try to do this all in 6 months, 5 months, a year, and see what happens.
Well, the teeth in this is that if the drug companies don't negotiate with the prices, that they can either pay a financial penalty or they can be excluded from Medicare and Medicaid altogether. Now, that's a double-edged sword because that means being included in those programs is a big part of their
sale.
But it also means that if you're on Medicare and, you know, one of these drugs gets dropped because the drug maker doesn't want to work with the negotiation program, that could clearly inconvenience some people. So it's new territory. As you've suggested, it's almost certainly going to result in court cases. We don't really know how quickly those court cases will proceed. The drug companies have until October 1st to determine or to state whether they're going to participate in the negotiations or not. And these are negotiations.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long they're going to take. It's new territory. It's not new territory for the world because, again, all other developed country national health programs do this. But it is new territory in the U.S.
Well, I would imagine that whoever's doing the negotiation here in the U.S. is going to look around the world and see what other countries are paying for these same medicines and go and start with there. When they say, hey, you're letting Sweden buy this for whatever, that's what we want to pay.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be that sort of work going on, and there's probably also going to be some work that tries to look at cost-benefit analysis, that if a drug is, you know, really helpful, but it's, you know, what it costs to use it is three times greater than the value that it provides, that's probably going to be used as part of those negotiations as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm wondering if they get a little cranky, the pharmaceutical company, would they just drop making the drug? Okay, we're just not going to make it anymore. That would affect a lot of people.
That is possible, but these drugs, I do think, I'm told, I mean, I'm not, a pharmacoeconomic expert, but I'm told these drugs have very healthy profit margins.
Sure.
The big cost is not making the drug, it's developing the drug. And so these drugs have already been developed, they've already been proven to work. And so I think it would be pretty short-sighted for a company to stop making it, although that is a possibility. I just think an unlikely one.
Yeah, you never know, though. It's going to be wonderful to see it happen. And at least they're starting somewhere. And why only 10? Let's get 100 of them on there and get all these people out there and just start all working.
Well, they are due to take on more. I think next year we're due to have 15. And then the next year I think there's another 20 or 25. So it's sort of, it is a new process in this country. And so it's, although I, like you, would like to see a whole lot more included, it was carefully worked out. You know, it had to pass Congress, so it had to be it ended up being a partisan issue like everything in Congress. But there were enough votes on both sides to get it through. And I would point out, by the way, that about 80% of Americans, when you poll them, what do you think about this, think this is fairly a good idea.
Yeah, really so a good idea. And if you like my vote, you better make it a good idea. Let's get on it. John, it's always good to have you. Dr. John Douglas, formerly the director of Tri-County Health and worked with the CDC. I know you're on a long road trip with your wife. Have a good time. Enjoy all of that, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
Okay, Murph. Take care of yourself.
Yep. Thank you for being on. Thank you for being there, too. Now, don't go away. It's No Copay Radio on Cozy 101.1, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging. I'm Murphy Houston. My buddy partner, Jayla Sanchez Warren, not here this week. She'll be back next week, and I'll be back in just a few seconds here.
We now continue with No Copay Radio. with your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren.
Thanks for hanging on. Yep, I told you we'd be back. No Copay Radio every Sunday morning, 7:30 here on Cozy 101.1. I am Murphy Houston. This is all brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging, and Jayla Sanchez Warren, who's the boss there, is off today. But we have another special guest. His name is Eric Levitan, who is the founder and CEO of Vivo. As he witnessed the decline of his parents' quality of life as they got older, he realized he wanted to better understand the aging process and help them. That's why he started Vivo, to create awareness and a safe, engaging, and impactful program to guide older adults to a safer and healthier life. Eric holds a PA in mathematics from Duke University. Go Duke. He resides in Atlanta and serves as an advisor to teach startups at the Atlanta Tech Village. Serves on the Duke Atlanta Regional Board and is deeply involved in his community. And Eric, welcome to No Call Pay Radio.
Thanks so much. I'm excited to be a part of it.
I had to cheer for Duke because one of my best buddies, he's a lawyer. We play golf a lot. He's a Dukie. He graduated from Duke. So.
Yeah, don't hold it against me.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of really excited about this because I get my physical workout, and my doctor, who's a gerontologist as well as just a physician, always just encourages me to not just work out for heart or whatever, but, you know, doing stuff to tighten up the body, doing some training, doing that kind of stuff. So is that kind of what Vivo is all about? And again, talk about how you started it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, when I, as an entrepreneur who had had the good fortune of being involved in some successful endeavors, as I was thinking about what I was going to do next, I actually got to get a firsthand view of how aging impacts us, and specifically around losing our balance, losing our mobility, health issues, and started to dive into the research around this. And it turns out, and I think some of this is rather intuitive, but being able to put a name to it, it turns out that we all lose muscle mass as we age, every single person on the planet. And there's actually a term for that. It's called sarcopenia. So an important thing, I think, for everyone who's listening to take away is to know that this exists. This is a real thing that actually leads to so many of the other conditions that we do talk about. So falls, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, all these other things that we associate with aging. There's this condition called sarcopenia, which is really this progressive loss of muscle mass and strength and function that happens as we age, that leads to all of these conditions. And so the more I started learning about this, the more I also learned that there's something you can do about it. We don't have to lose this rapid rate of muscle mass and strength as we get older that leads to all of these issues. We can actually do something. We can consistently challenge our muscles, which will lead to increases in strength, increases in muscle mass, and ward off those diseases and those issues related with aging. That process is also known as resistance training or strength training. And so the more I dove into the research, the more I realized, wow, what an amazing opportunity to create visibility and awareness to older adults really all over the planet, that engaging in a consistent strength training program is probably one of the most significant things that we can do as we get older to maintain our quality of life, to maintain our independence, and maintain our health.
Well, and I'm curious, though, Eric, in your definition of a senior – or maybe an older adult, as you just mentioned. I mean, should people start, I'm going to wait till I'm 70 and I'm going to start lifting weights? No, should start way before then, don't you think?
Absolutely. And it's funny, this process of losing muscle mass as we age, it actually starts in our 30s.
Whoa.
And yeah, it's one of those things that's, you know, sort of depressing to think about, that it starts at such an early age. Our physical strength peaks at around age 25. And in our 30s, we start to lose about 3 to 5% of our muscle mass and strength per decade, but it accelerates. And so when we get into our 50s and 60s is when it really starts to impact us in a noticeable way. And that's why a lot of us begin to feel those pains of aging, you know, getting up off of the floor, standing up from a chair. We start to notice that in our 60s. And, you know, to your point, it is never too early to begin this. And actually, the sooner you engage in any kind of strength training and really fitness at all, the more benefit you're going to see in your life. But on the other end of the spectrum, I also want to make it clear that it is never too late. We have customers who join our program in their 90s, having not really engaged in a strength training program ever in their life, and they see dramatic improvements.
Wow.
So I think, while yes, you're absolutely right, the sooner you can engage in a program like this, the better. This is good for literally everybody. But also on the flip side, it's not too late. And if you happen to be in your 70s and your 80s and your 90s, and you think that you can't do this, you actually can, and there's a ton of benefit from doing it.
So, well, let's talk about that. What do you do at Vivo? And first of all, how'd you get that name? It's kind of a cool name.
Well, thank you. When I was creating this program, I really wanted to do something that was not reminding people of their age. And there's a lot of other fitness programs for older adults out there, and they all have this connotation about reminding people that they're older. And what I wanted to do was create something that was a little bit more inspirational. And so the term Vivo is actually, it's Italian for lively.
Oh.
It's Spanish for life, but really where it resonated with me, I'm a passionate music person. I play music. I love to listen to music. I love to go to in-person concerts. Vivo is actually a musical term that means to play music with life and vigor. And I thought, what better way to encapsulate the true spirit of what we're trying to accomplish than this concept of playing life or playing music with life and vigor. And so that's really the kind of genesis of Vivo. What Vivo is it's an online but live and interactive small group fitness program with a real focus on building strength. And I think it's really important to understand that while we all want to be in person, and there's so much benefit for being in person, for a lot of us, it's challenging.
Yes.
And whether it's traffic, whether it's weather, whether it's an inability to drive, whether it is just the convenience factor, giving someone an online solution removes some of those barriers that prevent us from doing these things that we know we should be doing. And so we don't believe in the, videos are great because you can watch them whenever you want. Unfortunately, I think what we see a lot in behavioral science is when people have the flexibility to do it whenever they want, they just don't do it. So we very much believe in this live and interactive experience. And so when we run classes, everyone's got their cameras on. There's a live trainer. Nobody's muted. This is an interactive experience that we also cap at 8 people. Because the other really important thing that we have learned is being able to individualize this for everyone is critical. As you probably are well aware,
right.
all of us are so different, right?
Absolutely.
As we age, we all have, some of us may have pain in our knees. Some of us have had hip replacements. We may have arthritis in our shoulder. And not only is there variation from individual to individual, there's variation from day to day for yourself.
Yeah.
Monday, you may feel great. Thursday, you wake up and your knee hurts and you're not really sure why.
That's,
the ability to individualize for everyone for that moment is really, really critical, and that's what we're very focused on.
Now, you must have a website, because people are thinking, well, this sounds really interesting, and I love the live aspect of it. Everything you said, Eric, is so true with working out. But where do we go to find out more information? Is there a website?
There is, and it is teamvivo.com. That's T-E-A-M, like you're a part of a team, Vivo, V-I-V-O.com. We really believe that when you join this program, you are becoming a part of a team. And not only does the small group really facilitate us being able to give individualized feedback, but it also allows us to create social engagement and build community. And one of the wonderful things about a small group, especially a small group of 8 people or less, is that we have the ability to create this social connection. And with a one-on-one trainer, you don't really get that. With a large group of 30, 40, 50 people, it's quite hard to build social engagement.
Right.
With a small group, it's actually really easy. And once you've got that connection, once you're building that community, what we see is this creates accountability. This creates behavioral change. It turns it into from an exercise program into something that you want to do. It's fun. It's social. And you're seeing the same people week in, week out. So you really start to develop these relationships.
Plus, you're seeing people all over the country. Maybe all over the world.
That's correct. And we have a number of customers in Colorado. We are working with organizations in Colorado, like AgeWise Colorado and an organization called A Little Help. And it's a really wonderful opportunity not only to get people together at a local level, but you're absolutely right. It's a national and a global level. You know, interacting with people from all over the country and all over the world is a lot of fun.
Exactly. And that little help group that you just mentioned here in Colorado, we've had them on No Copay Radio. That's a good organization to be involved with, by the way, Eric. Good for you.
That's wonderful. Yeah, we love them, and they're doing really great work.
Well, let's back up a little bit here. We talk about why or what seniors should do, or as you get older, what you do. Why do people fight that? Why do they say, I'm not doing that?
You know, it's an interesting thing to look into, and we've spent quite a bit of time trying to understand how to motivate older adults when it comes to exercise. And for a lot of us, we don't know it, and we can't put a name on it, and I'll name it in just a second, but we come up with excuses for why it doesn't work for us. Well, often the most common thing that I hear is, I don't have enough time. The second most common thing I hear is, I walk every day, I don't need to strength train. And I think it's really important. Part of that is just educating on why this is so important. But part of it is also understanding that as we age and we begin to lose our mobility and lose our function and the ability to do the things that we used to do, there's a level of shame that's at the root of this for a lot of people. And getting that first step, taking that first step to overcome this fear, this embarrassment, this shame is hard. And yeah. So what we really try to do is make this a safe, trusted place where this is not a competition. As we are thinking about what we do, we get approached by a lot of people who are saying, hey, let us help you build out these platforms to create more engagement. We can do leaderboards. You know, a leaderboard is a wonderful thing when you're 25 and 28 and you really want to be first. Right. For a lot of older adults, they're just trying to maintain what they have and continue to evolve and enjoy the life that they've built and maintain their independence, stay in their homes. And being on a leaderboard, not at the top of the list for what's motivating. Creating a safe space that is trusted, where you understand how to get this individualized experience, is much more important than seeing your name at the top of a leaderboard. And so understanding that process, understanding how to develop that trust, how to develop that empathy, how to develop that individualized experience, that's what allows people to succeed in this environment. That's a really big part of what we do.
And we're talking with Erica Levitan from Vivo, that's spelled V-I-V-O. And I think people need to realize, because I do what you tell us to do about some strength listening. I do ellipticals and that, and I'm in my 70s, and we try to get better. But people think, oh, what are you going to have me lift 100-pound weights? It's not like that, is it, Eric?
It's not at all. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the first things we try and do, especially with our messaging, is, you know, when we say strength training, for a lot of people, they conjure up images of maybe it's Arnold Schwarzenegger shirtless in a gym pumping iron, or if you're a little bit older, it's Jack LaLanne doing, you know, one-arm push-ups. And we think about these things, and that's not us. And so that only increases that barrier to participation. And I think what we really try to emphasize, and what we do in our classes, is we mimic movements in everyday life. We mimic the things that you do for activities of daily living. Standing up from a chair is an activity that every person does hundreds of times a day.
Yeah.
When you lose the ability to stand up from a chair, you begin to lose your independence. Standing up from a chair is a wonderful example of an actual strength training exercise. That's a squat.
Yeah,
so
that is.
So we really emphasize what are the things that you do every day, you know, getting out of a chair, getting off of a toilet, getting out of a car, right? This is a squat, or it's a lunge, or carrying a bag of groceries, or reaching up overhead and grabbing something from a cabinet. These are all things that we need to be able to do to maintain our independence, maintain our health. Let's really utilize exercises that reinforce those things. This is not about pumping iron in a gym and lifting hundreds of pounds. This is about body weight exercises. We use resistance bands, which are really gentle on the body, but do create that challenge, that level of challenge required to get progress and outcomes. And mimicking activities of daily living, really replicating things that you need to do every day.
That's great stuff. So, Eric, before I let you go here, what a quick conversation we've had here. Vivo, it's what it's called. How do we find you? Give us the website again.
It's teamvivo.com. When you join Vivo, you become a part of this team, and it is one of the most impactful things you can do to maintain your health, maintain your quality of life, maintain your independence. And it's also a really wonderful way to engage with other family or friends who live across the country. I do Vivo. My dad lives in Philadelphia. I live in Atlanta. I see my dad twice a week because we do Vivo together.
That's a great story.
And it is a wonderful, wonderful experience that as an adult child of an aging parent, not only allows me to see my dad twice a week to see how he's doing,
perfect,
but also really, really done something amazing for our relationship because we have this shared experience together. And he's proud of me. I'm proud of him. I see him working. We laugh. It's silly. It's fun. And it's just really been an enhancement for our relationship. And I would love to kind of help get the word out about that because this is a really wonderful thing for adult children and their aging parents.
Good story there, Eric. I love that last part, too, about the dad, too. Eric Levitan from Vivo, thanks a lot for coming on No Copay Radio today and keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
This has been No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. Join us every Sunday at 7:30 here on Cozy 101.1.